Welcome, everyone. Good morning. It's great to see everybody. This is our biggest call that we've had yet. We had close to 35 clients sign up, which we are extremely excited about. And we're going to be talking today about the Trump 2.0 economy and our economic review. I believe everybody knows me. I'm Michael Chaika. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Malvern Capital. I have on the call today my partner, Jim Olson. Jim is our chief investment officer, Lou Iovannoni, our executive vice president, and Jenny Shapiro, who is our chief operating officer. Today's call is going to last about 30 minutes, and we're going to be accepting questions after Jim's presentation. After the presentation, if you have any questions, raise your hand. There's a yellow raise your hand box icon at the very bottom of your Zoom screen. And then when we're taking questions, I'll go ahead and turn on your audio. And given that we're going to be taking questions today, I have a short disclaimer that I must read. This conference call is being recorded and presented by Malvern Capital Management, registered investment advisor, and is for informational purposes only. Investing involves risk, and loss of investors should be prepared to bear potential losses. No portion of this presentation is to be interpreted as a solicitation to buy or sell a security or the provision of personalized investment, tax, or legal advice. MCM's comments and opinions are subject to change without notice and should not be taken as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any security or any investment strategy offered by MCM. Any reference to any performance measurement is not a recommendation or guarantee of a particular outcome. Past performance is no indication or no indicator of future results. So today's call is very unique because we normally only do one or two calls a year, but given the geopolitical environment and everything that has happened post-election, we thought it would be a good time to have a call for all of our clients. As you know, much has changed in the last few months since the election, and today's topic is going to be how to navigate the Trump 2.0 market and the economy. And believe me, we understand everybody is nervous right now. The calls started to come in a little bit about a week ago or so, and Jim and the team, we decided to have this call to make sure that everybody is up to speed on what our thinking is. We like to believe that, you know, by entrusting us to manage your wealth, we help you remove all the emotion when it comes to investing. And for that, you know, Jim and I and the whole team, thank you very much. I want to bring up something right now. So one of the things that we listed in our year-end newsletter is, and I quote, "However, we expect a volatile year. A market correction is likely early in 2025. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So before I turn over the call to Jim, I want to talk about two topics of discussion. I want to talk about market corrections and portfolio construction. So just a little bit about the background of your team. So everybody on this call, Jim and I have been in the investment business each for 40 years. Our first sort of entree into market volatility was Black Monday in October 1987, when the market fell 22% in one single day. I remember I worked for Charles Schwab at the time. Jim was at Vanguard, and it was all hands on deck at that time, where the phones were just so backed up. In fact, so many people tried to get through, and those people that got through because of their emotions lost a great deal of money. We lived through the 1990 recession. Oil prices spiked. The market fell 18% in 3 months. We also lived through the dot-com bubble of 2000. The NASDAQ index fell over 75% in 2 years. September 11th, 2001, the markets fell 14% immediately following the attack. The Great Recession of 2008, the market fell 50% in 18 months. Now, I would tell you, and I would share this with the entire audience, so for as long as that we've been managing money, that was probably the most, challenging time for both myself, Jim, and Lou. Given that the time period was so long, it was, you know, dying by a thousand cuts, because every day you came into the market and the market was down. It was down. You would get a rebound and the market would then sell off again. And this lasted not just for a month or a couple months. I mean, this lasted for 18 months, as everybody realized. And then, lastly, the coronavirus of 2020. The market sold off 35% in 1 month. So what I want to do is I want to share a chart with you again before I turn this over to Jim. And what I'm going to show you here, and again, for those clients that are going to be listening after this presentation that can't see the charts, what I'm doing is I'm going to show two charts. The first chart is what the Dow Jones looked like in 1987, which was Black Monday. where the Dow Jones fell 22% in one single day. And if you were an investor at that time, I mean, that was really a challenging period. The next chart I want to show you is what the market looked like during the coronavirus. Again, the market fell 35% in one month, which again, we've all lived through that because it was only 5 years ago. And you talk about, you know, testing your emotions and testing your wherewithal. That was really, again, another challenging time. But the point of me showing you these charts and what we've lived through over the past is that these are just microcosms of investment time periods. When you take a look at the long-term time period, what you see is Black Monday is just a little blip, the dot-com bubble of 2000, again, the Great Recession and coronavirus. And after all of these events, the markets have continued to go on to new highs. And so the moral of the story is that what we're trying to do is we want to really, let me just close this out for you. What we're trying to do is just really manage your emotions and share with you that this is just another period of time where we're going through a market correction. And so from where we sit, we're just looking at this as another, again, macro event waiting for more volatility and even more downside to develop and create a better buying opportunity and reallocation opportunities. The last thing before I turn this over to Jim is we always get asked, you know, how do we as investment managers avoid market corrections and macroeconomic events like we're going through? And the real answer is that we don't. Every client that we have on board with Malvern Capital, you go through two things. We ask you about your risk tolerance, and we also ask you about what your time horizon is. And the byproduct of those answers result in what we would, you know, what type of model and portfolio we will construct for you. Some may be ultra conservative, some may be ultra aggressive. However, one thing to realize is that 85% of our clients fall into really two categories. They fall into either a balanced portfolio, which is 60% equities and 40% fixed income, or they fall into a growth and income portfolio, which is 70% equity and 30% fixed income. And the thing to know is that even though the market is going down right now, and the market, I guess, as of yesterday is down about 5 or 6%, Jim is better with the specific numbers. But when you look at these numbers, most of our client portfolios are either flat or, you know, they might be down slightly by 1%. And that's by design, because as the equities go down in your portfolio or the stocks go down, the fixed income portion or the bonds will act as a buoy and provide support in the portfolio. So the other part is that's probably a great segue into what the other thing I wanted to talk about was portfolio composition and construction. Jim, who is our CIO, really spends a great deal of time looking at the individual investments that we have within the portfolio. And it's not that we're just picking a number of stocks and a number of ETFs and another number of bonds and just putting them into one portfolio. We spend a lot of time, what we call stress testing these portfolios and making sure that the portfolios are acting exactly as we want during periods of time like we're going through right now. So the idea is, and the moral of the story that I'm trying to share with you is stick to our guns. We have a portfolio that's built for risk, and let us manage your emotion. So at that, I'm going to toss this over to Jim. Today, we're going to be talking about, again, you know, how to manage through the markets of the Trump 2.0 economy, the broadening out of the market, value versus growth, looking beyond the Magnificent Seven, tariffs, and then does the slowing growth mean that we're facing a recession? So go ahead, Jim. It's all you.
Okay. So despite the sell-off that really started around February 19th, that was the high of the market. We've seen a broadening out of the market. And what I mean by that is we're moving beyond just a concentrated few stocks that have been driving the market for the last few years to more broader exposure of the market taking over. There's two types of stocks. There are growth stocks, which are companies that sell at expected earnings growth. And then there are companies that are considered value stocks, which sell more at their intrinsic value. They tend to be more mature companies, dividend paying companies, that type of company, as opposed to growth stocks that have less emphasis on dividends and are more looking towards the future. For the past 2 calendar years, 2024 and 2023, the S&P and the Nasdaq markets were largely driven by what are the so-called Magnificent Seven stocks. These include Apple, Tesla, Amazon, Alphabet, Nvidia, Microsoft, and Meta or Facebook. These stocks make up a large part of the growth indexes such as the technology-heavy Nasdaq 100 and the Russell 1000 Growth Index. 2024, the Nasdaq 100, that was up 26% for the year. The Russell 1000 Growth Index was up 33%, and the Russell Value Index was up only 14%. And it was a similar pattern in 2023. Nasdaq was up 55%. Russell 1000 growth was 43%, and the value index was up just 11%. The top 10 stocks in the market as of the end of the year had a price earnings ratio of 20, 29.8, which is pretty expensive. So we're coming into the year at a very expensive market based on those top 10 stocks. The remaining market had a price earnings ratio of 18.2, much more reasonable valuation. But valuations are really stretched or were really stretched on the Magnificent Seven. Since the earlier part of the year, we've seen a shift away from the Magnificent Seven towards a more broader market. Year to date, this is as of Monday's close, the Magnificent Seven stocks are all negative except for Meta or Facebook, as it's called Meta now. Value stocks have outperformed growth stocks. Year to date, the Russell 1000 value is up 1.01%. The Russell 1000 growth is down 9.33%. And for the past month, basically, the time frame that we're talking about, where the market has begun to sell off, the Russell 1000 value is down 3.51 versus the Russell 1000 growth down 11.71. We're also seeing expansion around the globe. The international stocks have really outperformed U.S. stocks this year. As of Monday's close, the MSCI EAFE index was up 9% year to date, versus the S&P, which is down 4.31%. We think this trend's going to continue because the broader market offers more value than the expensive growth stocks. As we mentioned earlier, we called for a correction at the beginning of the year, and it had little to do with Trump, and more to do with valuations. And I think that's really what's really pushing the market down is the froth in the market. Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty, but it has been a very expensive market.
Hey, Jim. So one thing, because again, in our newsletter and through our discussions, we say correction, right? So correction. So could you tell our clients, what in your mind, I mean, we know what a correction is, but when you look at a percentage of the market, can you speak a little bit about what is a correction and what we're looking for?
Yeah, so a correction in the market is defined as a drop of 10%, but less than 20%. So when you hit 20% or more, that's what's considered a bear market. We don't see a bear market. We see nothing more than a correction. Corrections happen usually on average once a year. We haven't had one for a couple years, so we're a little overdue. So our expectation is we'll probably see somewhere around 15% down before the market turns around. And what we're looking for is usually how corrections end is that just doesn't happen one day the market decides to go up. It usually ends when there's panic selling in the market, when people want to get out at any price and they sell. And we have what they call a crescendo, where the market just has a whoosh down And then it just turns around on a dime and goes back up. That's when the panic selling, the volatility index is spiking. And that's kind of what we're looking for. And we're not there yet. So we still have a little ways to go. But again, we think we're really well positioned for protecting our clients' assets on the downside because of this broadening out of the market and our exposure into the various markets besides just the large cap growth stocks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And again, just sort of a follow-up to one of my comments is that the majority of our clients are either 60-40 or 70-30. And so if you take the equity portion, which let's say in a balanced account is 60%, the growth portion of that may only be 5%, maybe 10%. It's only a small portion of that. And so realistically, again, if the broad market goes down, we're not really looking for individual portfolios to go down anywhere near what the market goes down. So, again, I would say even if you have individual questions regarding your individual portfolio, I mean, you can always reach out to any of us and we're happy to discuss that. So I think the big topic next, Jim, I think this is really what's driving a lot of the volatility right now in the market is tariffs. I mean, I think it's important to share with the group. I mean, what are they and how are they really going to impact the market and the economy?
Yeah, so let me start by saying we're advocates of free trade at Malvern Capital, but we're also advocates of fair trade. Tariffs are taxes that are charged on goods imported from other countries. Companies that bring foreign goods into the country pay the tax to the government. Typically, tariffs are a percentage of the product's value. For example, if imposing a 20% tariff on Chinese goods, for example, means a product worth $10 would have an additional $2 charged as a tariff. Pre-Trump, the United States has been one of the most open economies and has been among the lowest average weighted tariffs in the world. United States imposes fewer barriers to imports than other major world economies, including those with similar political and economic systems. And for many years, United States has been treated unfairly by trading partners, both friend and foe. This lack of reciprocity is a source of our country's large and persistent annual trade deficit. For example, some of the tariffs, this is pre-Trump, some of the tariffs charged by other countries, Canada imposes a 25% tariff on imports, 10% tariff on energy resources. Mexico has a 25% tariff on imports. China has a 10% tariff on imports. European Union has a 25% tariff on imports. So we're really not seeing a lot of fair trade when the United States hasn't really been, prior to Trump's first administration, didn't use tariffs at all. Most economists, but not the president, believe that the higher tariffs raise the price of goods and thus represent a tax ultimately that consumers pay. There's growing fears in the financial markets that higher tariffs, if in place for an extended period of time, could lead to higher prices, increased inflation, and reduced consumer spending. In the long term, I don't believe tariffs are inflationary. I believe inflation comes from too much money chasing too few goods. And we've mentioned that a lot in market commentaries over the past few years when inflation was really getting out of control. Money is created by excessive government spending and the Federal Reserve's increasing the money supply. Those are the primary drivers of inflation. Tariffs do not increase the money supply or increase money in the system. If there is not more money in the system, laws of supply and demand will ultimately prevail and will affect the quantity of goods sold and at what price. We talked about in our last market commentary. I don't want to get into an economics lesson, but price elasticity. And certain products will be more affected by higher prices than other products, essentially. is what that's saying. And we think that it may affect corporate earnings, but I don't think it's going to affect inflation over the long term. Short term, yes, probably, but not over the long term. So I think inflation in the economy, which is the rate, basically, we had a good CPI report today. It's Consumer Price Index for the month of February. So it does indicate that prices are starting to stabilize. And the market, the futures at least liked it initially and really ramped up on the news. But ultimately, we want to see prices fall, not just increase at a lower rate or rate of increase. So right now, prices are still increasing, but they're increasing at a less of a rate of increase that they did over the last few years. Trump's attempt to shrink the size of government so that government spending declines, along with tighter monetary policy by the Fed, I think that's ultimately going to be good for inflation and will help inflation come down. So yes, short term inflation from tariffs, but longer term, I don't think that's going to be the case.
So I guess the real question is, right? So, again, for our clients, as stewards of their money, what do we do? Do we make any changes to portfolios? And I guess realistically, has our outlook changed?
Well, I would say one thing that we've done is that we've extended duration on our bond portfolio because we think as inflation comes down, the Federal Reserve will be able to cut interest rates. And that's one of the things that will drive longer-term bond prices higher is lower interest rates. So we've done that. We did that at the beginning of last year, and that was a good move for our clients was to extend duration. So that's primarily the one factor that we've done.
Okay. And so just, again, for the audience, extending duration means going out to longer term bonds. So instead of, let's say, a 1 year bond, we would look at 3 to 5, 7 years out, going out longer duration. So, Jim, I guess, the final question is growth, right? So GDP, does slowing growth really mean that we're facing a recession? And the recession topic hasn't come up in a while, but I think given all the volatility and all the headline risk that's out there, what are your thoughts on a recession?
Yeah, so over the last few years, we've addressed that topic in our market commentary, the topic of recession. And we've been, even though economists have been calling for recession for the last few years, we've been very much saying that there would be no recession. And that was primarily driven by things like the jobs numbers were just too strong to suggest a recession was coming in. But there were certainly warning signs out there of a recession. Over the past several weeks, data have started to pile up indicating that economic growth is starting to stall. We've seen poor guidance out of Walmart, which is kind of a tell on what the consumer is doing, and in particular, lower income consumers. We've had a weak U.S. retail sales report. We've had disappointing consumer confidence data. We've had poor news from the housing sector, and a sizable decline in the Institute for Supply Management Manufacturing report. Also, credit card delinquencies and charge-offs are rising. So there's some concerns there. And then lastly, we're seeing CEOs on recent conference calls all pointing towards a slowdown. And they're giving outlooks that are a lot more cautious than they have been in the past few years. So those are kind of making us think that the risk of a recession is greater. Last quarter, the U.S. gross domestic product came out at 2.3%, But the Atlanta Fed, which is a widely watched report that comes out on March 3rd, they came out and said that they forecast a very weak first quarter, or this quarter, at a negative 2.8%. And two back-to-back negative quarters defines a what is often defined as a recession. So that raised a lot of concerns for investors. Just kind of, it not that they're always right, but it does put some fear into people that they're saying that we're going to see a negative, such a steep negative growth in the gross domestic product. And just one other point, noted economist Ed Yardani, who I follow very closely, he just raised the odds of a recession on March 4th from 20% to 35%. So, what's causing the economic weakness? I'm not going to try to make this sound political, as we are politically agnostic. But there are growing concerns, uncertainty out there about taxes, tariffs, DOGE, and immigration. So, nobody likes uncertainty, especially the market. There's certainly a lot of positives too to point to. There are rising corporate profits. There's still a historically low unemployment rate. There is a focus on deregulation, and there's a very high likelihood that the current tax situation will be extended. Those are all positives that I think will that kind of say maybe no recession, but there's also those negatives there that are pointing towards a recession. So when you take a look at the various moving parts in the economy in Washington right now, there's signs that consumers may pull back on buying things like cars and going out to eat and taking expensive trips. And maybe conserving cash. Similarly, some of the conference calls have indicated that companies are pulling back a little on capital expenditures and putting freezes on hiring. We've also seen recently the Challenger report, which measures announced job layoffs. Came out for February saying that there were 172,000 announced layoffs, the highest since July of 2020. But on the other hand, the jobs report that just came out last week for February showed 151,000 new jobs created. So we do have a lot of conflicting data. The unemployment rate still remains historically low at 4.1%, and which is just positive signs for the labor market. So that even though there have been a lot of announced layoffs, there's the government cutting of government jobs, there's still growth in jobs, at least for right now. One of the things we look at is the outlook for corporate profits in our assessment of the economy. And I like to look at the S&P Global's earnings forecasts on a regular basis for trends in earnings. And these indicators trend from here will provide useful information on the outlook for the economy. And one point about earnings, the growth in earnings has been slowing, growth in earnings expectations has been slowing down over the last several quarters. So that's kind of a negative. So what do we think about a recession on the horizon? I think that's the $64,000 question. We place the odds of a recession at about 40% over the next 12 months. And over the past 2 years, our odds of recession were around 10%. So it's definitely elevated at this point for a lot of the reasons that I've outlined.
All right, Jim, and thank you. So the interesting thing too is, let's do this first. I have a comment. So if you have a question, I'll go ahead and hit the the raise your hand button at the very bottom, and then I have a comment, and then we'll go ahead and open it up for questions. But typically with a recession, as Jim said, you see, you know, a couple of quarters until it's finally announced. We could very well be in a recession right now. And by the time you move through the recession, the reality of it is that when they start to announce it, we could have already been through it. So we have a question from Mr. Palmer. Let's see. Unmute.
Can you hear me? Or
oh, yeah. Go ahead, Steve. We got you. Go ahead.
Here's my question for Mike and Jim and anyone else. If we consider that the bond portion of most of our portfolios is our edge, or one of our major edges, if this chaos on tariffs continues, is there a way to reallocate somewhat inside the equity portion to get away from tariff-sensitive areas? I mean, obviously, Canada, Mexico, China are big targets for tariffs. Can we select equity plays that may not be as affected by tariffs?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So, hey Jim, I'll tee it up and then throw it over to you. So, in every client's portfolio, so if you're a balanced portfolio or a growth and income portfolio, even within that, you have 60% equity, you have 40% fixed income. But if you break that down even further, 15%, between 10 and 15% of all of our client portfolios, except for aggressive growth, which we only have a few of those, contain what we call alternative investments. And these alternative investments are not correlated. I don't mean to throw out a bunch of big words, but they're not correlated to both the fixed income market or the equity market. And we sort of pigeonhole them in to both a portion of the equity and a portion of the fixed income. So, Jim, do you want to comment on that if I didn't hit it right?
Yeah. So in addition to that, within our equity allocation, I think we are pretty diversified right now. We have international exposure. Internationals are doing terrific right now. They're having a really good year. Part of that is the declining dollar helps international investments, but those markets are doing well as well. And value stocks are doing well despite the announced tariffs and tariff fears. It's really a valuation thing right now. What's been really hit the hardest have been the things that have been the most expensive. And we think that's going to continue. And we have such a minimal exposure to those things that it really offsets. That's why our portfolios are holding up so well. To basically go to your question, is there actions we could take? We're always looking to make changes to the portfolio if they seem to be necessary. So yes, we're always looking at that to do those types of things.
Did that answer the question, Steve?
Yeah, pretty much. I was just thinking maybe we might want to consider. And again, I don't think this is we haven't reached a trigger event, but if the chaos continues, I'm wondering if we move more into internationals as a further hedge. But I leave it up to you guys.
That's certainly a possibility. So I wouldn't rule it out.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Anyone else? You can hit the raise your hand button at the bottom. While we're waiting for another question, I'll share with you. We had a question from a long-term client. And the question was, and I'm sort of paraphrasing a little bit. He says, you know, guys, he goes, I don't see, and this is a client that's been with us for 5 or 6 years. And the question is, you know, I don't see a lot of activity in my account. Who's watching my account? And the reality of it is that we don't do a lot of trading. Typically, you'll see the majority of the trading that we do is typically done in January. When we will rebalance accounts based on, you know, the volatility of the market, what certain asset classes or individual investments are doing. The reason that we do a rebalance in January, and this is really more geared towards taxable accounts, is that so we can spend the entire rest of the year trying to garner losses to offset any gains. And that's really worked to our process pretty well. But the reality of it is, and again, just because you don't see activity in your account doesn't mean that we're not looking at it. We look at everybody's account. We look at everybody's investments that we have under our fiduciary control to make sure that they are still well within the guidelines and what we're looking from a performance for that specific investment. If you recall, one of my comments was we don't just pick names, we don't pick ETFs and funds. There's a lot of research that goes into building these portfolios so that they react in a certain way over a full market cycle. So again, I wanted to share that with you. Hold on, Shelly. Let's see. I will unmute you. Shelly, let's see.
This is just a general question, but if we do fall into a recession, what actions would be taken or what would we look toward from you all?
Well, I think we position our portfolios to go through the ups and downs in the of the economy. And like Mike said earlier, we may be in a recession right now, and by the time it's announced that we've been in a recession, we could be on our way out of it, and the stock market will act accordingly. So I don't think we're not going to go all to cash because of that. We think there's enough things that work in during economic slowdown, and we're exposed to those. And I think our diversification really, really helps out in that event.
Yeah. And Shelly, one other sort of a follow-up comment to that is that, you know, if we saw, a very long-term recession possibility. So right now, when you look at clients' portfolios across the board, we're equal weighted. And what that means is that we are equal weighted between value and growth. And if we saw a long-term recession, you know, again, Jim, we would probably take a slightly more heavily weighted towards value or maybe some other different asset classes, maybe international. But again, we're a little ways away from that. I mean, is that a fair comment, Jim?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Shelly. Anyone else, folks? No? Well, look, you know, on behalf of myself, my partner, Jenny and Lou, we really want to thank you for your trust and for your business. If you have any follow-up questions, you know, after this call that may have popped up, you can reach out to any one of us. The best advice that, and we always, you know, end our calls with this, the best advice that we can leave with you is turn off your news and, you know, go watch some episodes of Seinfeld or something, because the news is, they're paid to sell sensationalism, and it's just not in your best interest. So again, thank you very much for all of your trust and your business. Again, we're here for you. So thank you very much.